And by Madrid, my wife was pretty much ready to divorce me in the 40 degree heat. So I just went, does it work? He went, yeah. I said, we'll drive onto the trailer. I'll give you some money. And off we went. Young people shouldn't drive fast cars because they'll crash them. And in my case, very true.
It's like watching someone stress test your nan in front of you.
Hello and welcome back to the 52nd, one whole week of the year, every year. of Cream Podcasts, of the Cars Revolving Around Me podcast. We are joined today with a special guest, Charlie from Surrey Rolling Road. Before we intro you and get into your life and your cars, we have to answer the question, whether cars rule or ruin everything around us. Will, would you like to demonstrate for Charlie? What is it?
It will be a rule for me this week because, well, one, there is still a Lamborghini Gallardo on my driveway.
Which you bought quite recently.
I don't know if I haven't let everyone know that.
But you've just bought a car, so you don't need to buy another one.
No. I am going back to Scotland, though, next Friday because I might have bought a CL 500. Right, well, technically, I haven't bought it yet, but we'll next Friday, go and look at that. But yeah.
So, a new daily?
Yeah, that's, well, maybe. We'll see. We will see.
Charlie, was it for you a rule or a ruin?
I'm going to go with a rule this week because nothing has dropped off any of my cars this week.
That's always a rule.
But it's only Wednesday.
There is time. So, okay, Ben?
Yes, rule. Big rule.
Oh, why is that, Ben?
I don't know.
For the audio listeners, why is it rule?
For the audio listeners, if you look over Edwin's shoulder and you listen very carefully, you'll be able to hear my Honda S2000 sat behind.
Very good, Benjamin. Now, do you want to tell a quick story? Because you've been...
Now, right now we're filming this Wednesday of the day before the podcast last week went out for you guys. Yep. So what you will see is the fact that we put a bid in on a Cayman.
We
did together.
I think you did that.
Okay, I do. Yeah,
I'm trying to get a photo op.
And that went well.
Yeah. Why was that?
Well, I got bullied on the podcast into doing it. I then put a bid on it. Felt really happy. Next morning, I was like, I'm going to have a look at some photos. Just told my dad about it. He was excited too. Looked at the photos. In the images, I looked closely at the temperature gauge. It's just in the red, just overheating.
And running as well.
Running. So obviously, what we think happened was front end was hit, radiator was hit.
Yeah.
All the coolant leaked out of it. And then the co-part decided to just leave it running whilst they were taking photos. So it was overheating. Whether it survived that or not, I don't know. Then ensued 2 days of panic because I was winning it, hoping that I didn't win it.
Now, that I got a phone call from Ben on that Friday, and he was the most anxious human being on earth. I could really get in there and twist the knife on that day. It was nice.
That was what the called it. And you know what, Ben?
It's a good spot.
Yeah, it's a good spot.
Because we didn't see it.
We missed that one. We did miss that.
So yeah, for context, Ben, we found the Copart listing on the podcast and of course did no research on the car. Just went, looks great, Ben. How much are you putting on it? Until he caved and did it. So did you not reduce your bid at one point?
Yeah, so you can't take your bid off, but the one thing you can do is you can reduce your max bid. So it hadn't reached my max bid yet. So I just put it down to £50 higher than the current bid and just prayed someone bid £100. But yeah, so I got that one.
Luckily, you got out of that.
Yeah.
And instead...
And after the whole conversation last week saying that I wasn't going to buy an S2000, I bought an S2000.
I want to hear your recollection of what happened yesterday morning, please.
Yesterday morning?
Yes.
I actually wanted to thank you too.
Okay.
But I'm not going to do it.
I'm just going to get rid of
it. Go on, please.
What is it?
No, I want to give Edwin Wilson credit because we have a very busy work week and stuff, and this car was in Southampton, which is far from me. So I was like, I basically came in yesterday saying...
But 40 minutes from where we are right now.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I was like, I want to buy the car, but I don't have time this week to go look at it. It was quite cheap. It'll probably go. So I said to these guys, let's go... No, I didn't say that to them.
Sorry. Yeah,
I said, I'll go and call the guy is what I said.
No.
Yes,
no.
I did.
No. This is why.
Manipulator.
This is why I wanted to bring it up because Ben said, yeah, it's nice, but I don't have time. I can't go do it. So I said, okay, Ben, what about before work? Because it's 40 minutes away. You could feasibly work out. He went, yeah. I said, what time has he said so far he can do? He went, I haven't called the guy. I was like, okay, we'll have our after work then. He's like, I can't do it. So there was no, I don't, that's what I want, remember my comment before about
Ben. We also have Ben's video footage of all this.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
we filmed the pain. I walked out of the room temporarily. I looked back and the auto trader was up, the ad was there, and the guy's phone number was just sitting on your phone. I could see the big green call thing and you were like, I can't do it.
So we made Ben call him. And Ben had to leave. He didn't want to be with us when he called the man. And we said,
make fun of me.
And we said, make sure you ask some questions. We came back and we said, did you ask questions? And he said, yeah, I'm not an idiot. We said, okay, well, did you ask him about the timing chain? He went, no. What did you ask about? I just asked about rust. That was it. That's the whole. That's all. Which is
a fair thing to ask.
I mean, yeah, but among other things, I'd say perhaps.
He went, has it got rust? He went, no. You went, oh well, yeah. I'll take it.
I'll take it right now.
But after that, we went and looked at it. You bought it.
Yes.
There will be a video on it semi soon, so we won't reveal too much about it. No. But are you happy?
Very, very, very happy. I drove it home last night, and so I've done like 250 miles in it in the last 24 hours. So
that's it. Tuck it away for winter now.
Yeah. Well, probably might have to with where they rust. So
we make dreams come true here.
Yeah. Bullying becomes cars.
So thank you for bullying me into it. I do appreciate it and taking me there and somewhat helping me.
We will take lots of the credit.
Yeah. So, yeah. I'll take it home. Cheers. Yeah.
And also to everyone who, because I put on my Instagram story last night and I had hundreds of messages, all from podcast listeners. Okay. All of them are from podcast listeners, all very excited,
big
which was nice.
Ben.
That wasn't what I was saying. Literally just saying, because it was all podcast people.
Well, which was nice. Good job, Ben. So. It is, for me, it's a rule. Yeah, fine. It's a rule. There's nothing, not much has happened.
And no reason to ruin.
No reason to ruin, which is always good for me.
Yeah.
I'm sure I'll think of a reason. Still nothing from Jeremy yet. Come on, Jeremy, man.
Jeremy, let's get that moving along.
That's the crashed Ferrari, the one I've shown you. It's scary, but I'm still excited by it.
Now, Charlie was one of the people you messaged about the 550.
About the 550, because there might be ITBs for the 550.
That no one's ever fitted before.
Yeah, that no one's ever done enough. Yeah, it's a bad idea. But shall we get into the meat? The reason that we wanted to have you on the podcast, Charlie, is because you're a very interesting man.
With even
more interesting stories, but even more than that, an even more interesting car collection.
Yeah.
You have one of the best car collections of anyone we know. And that's not just monetarily, that's taste-wise. It's TDC. Can you run through, what is the current fleet?
The current fleet, gosh. I think it's about 20 now.
It's a nice round number, though.
Yeah.
Of assorted tat that I've collected over the years. It's not that I don't like supercars. I just can't afford supercars.
Yeah.
So I just buy shit.
Who's that sound like? God, that sounds like a sort of YouTube channel that I watch.
Yeah. It's been over 20 years of collecting.
Yeah.
Most of the stuff I own I've had for a very long time, when things were cheap.
Yeah.
And obviously as getting older and having kids and everything, you tend to have less available income to buy cars. I still seem to manage, but I tend to wait until something comes along that you just need to be in the right place at the right time.
Yeah.
During COVID, I was walking my dog, and I passed a garage, which is local to my house. And out the front was a 944 S2 looking rather sad, had rusty sills. I inquired, once I put my mask on, how much? And he said, "Oh, £1,500, and you can have it." So I said, "Done," and I got the 944, and it's now all been welded up and did the suspension on it, and it's been sprayed as well. And it's home, and it's a great car. But I don't really go out and seek.
I was going to say, yeah, if you saw one at $9,000, you wouldn't be interested.
I wouldn't be interested. Yeah. No, maybe 20 years ago, but then things weren't worth. You know,
yeah.
I've got an E34 3.8. M5.
One of the best things.
Daytona Violet. I bought it from a chap in North London. This is 20 years ago. It's probably slightly naively, who assured me that it had a fresh MOT and had no rust. And to give you an indication of how much these things were worth back then, I paid $2,500 from a dealer for it.
Gee.
It had done 290,000 miles.
No one wanted them.
You couldn't give the stuff away.
Yeah.
And this was a car. I mean, it was only 13 years old.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I mean, I had an E46 M3 at the same time. I bought that in about 2004 or 2005, I think, which I'd given, you know, good money to a dealer for. And I actually sold the E46 M3 and kept the E34 because I enjoyed driving the E34 because it is, in my mind, still one of the best cars ever made. It's now done 230,000 miles. I used it as my daily for 7 years.
I was going to say, that's a recurring theme with your cars. You like high mileage cars.
I do like high mileage cars.
The 8 Series is on?
I've got an E31. That's on 235,000.
Nice. And you'd plow, you keep going with mine. It's not like you bought it with a load of miles.
I don't buy cars to look at. Yeah. I mean, they've got to be used. The only problem I'm coming to now is having had all these cars for a long time and used them, they're starting to get to the point where if I don't start dealing with some of the issues like the rust and everything, they're gonna die.
They just die, yeah.
I've just had the 34. We spent 2 years restoring it. And you know, massive sections were cut out of the because it was just so wrong. Because the chap had assured me it had no rust, when we got it back to my work 20 years ago, you could run a screwdriver down the inside of the sill and you just daylight. I mean, you know, it was just, but for $2,500, you don't care.
Yeah, who cares?
You know, and I had an MOT.
If you've been to Surrey Rolling Road, you will notice just to the left of the diner, there's a two-post lift. There will be some form of long-term project
that will be
on the go.
Yeah, I don't rush them. You know, they take as long as they take. I often don't have time to do the mechanicals myself, and probably not that talented the mechanicals. So I have a group of friends who come and help me out. And you know, the 8 series is on there now. I bought that in 2012 from a friend of mine called Aussie Pete. His name's Pete. He's an Australian. anybody who's met Aussie Pete, he's a bit of a legend in BMW circles. But I was up at his Slough Way, and he's got his.
Sorry to hear that.
It was Ivor.
That's nice.
And he's got about 40 cars in his garden, and he's an absolute legend. And he, in the corner, I just popped in. He had this 840 CI, one owner from New.
And it's Barbados green?
No, it's Velvet Blue.
Oh, it's the Velvet Blue car. I forgot about that.
And it had done 206,000 miles. And he just paid $2,500 for it from a guy. And I gave him 3 for this thing and used it as my daily. And then a couple of months later, my wife said we were going on honeymoon. Actually, I got married around then. And my wife said, what are we going to take on honeymoon? And we took the 8 series. The aircon didn't work. And we were going to the south of Spain. So I took it to a friend of mine. And actually, because we were so busy preparing for the wedding, I took it. A friend of mine took it to a mother mate to get the aircon sorted. I got it back, and it got to Calais. The aircon broke again, and by Madrid, my wife was pretty much ready to divorce me in the 40-degree heat. And then I got to the south of Spain and pulled the front bumper off on a speed bump.
Oh no!
Yeah. So I mean, the rest of the honeymoon was fine. And the batteries. There's 2 batteries in an 840. Yep. One of the batteries was obviously faulty, because it kept emitting quite bad fumes in the middle of Spain in the 40-degree heat, and my wife almost died. But apart from that, it was a great honeymoon.
And for that reason, the car's sentimental and will never go.
It's sentimental to me, probably not to her.
Yeah, she was a girl.
They've got the 8 series. BMW's always been a recurring thing for me.
Not a Monaro.
It's a Holden Commodore VTS. Yeah. It's one of 50 they brought in. TWR Racing brought 50 in official cars.
Photo.
I think it was about 97, 98, they brought 50 over. None of them were rust proof, so they all rot. And I bought that from Liverpool about 7 years ago for a very nice chap. Same color. And it needed welding. But I love it. It's such a brutish car. It's just, there's no finesse to it at all.
That's 5.7
LS1. LS1.
Yeah. Yep.
There's no finesse to it. It's just very brutish, but so much fun to drive. They go sideways very nicely as well.
You wouldn't know on the road.
You wouldn't know. No. I mean, it's pretty much a Corvette saloon. It's so much fun. And you just, every time you get into it, you're just waiting for it to say, all right, mate.
So what about, the car that it would have gone out by now, Ben, the Model T video?
Yeah.
The Model T. What's the story on that? Because that's...
Model T. As I get older into my more advanced years, I actually have become... I had a Porsche Turbo after the M3, actually. I bought a 996 Turbo and had... we put turbos and stuff, and it was like 580 horsepower. Loved it. Then...
Casual.
My wife got pregnant and we sold it and bought an X5. These days I actually, despite my job is telling people how fast their cars are, I pretend I like the older stuff more now. And I'm going older as I get older.
Yeah.
I've got obviously the Camino, which which I bought
so good
about 8 years ago, and that's restored. And then I've always wanted a Model T Ford. I don't know what it is. I've always had a thing about them. Just because they're so obstinate, you know, to drive, and a little bit of a challenge.
Oh yeah,
and they're dirt cheap.
Yeah,
you know, I paid £8,000 for that car, and it was last Christmas. And having wanted one for a while, my wife went to visit her family over Christmas for a couple of days and left me and my son together alone in the house, which is probably never,
with access
never,
to eBay.
Yeah, eBay and a car and a tow car.
is a setup.
Something's going to happen.
So I woke my son up and I said, look, I found a Model T Ford in Swindon. And I ran one of my customers, actually, who does races in the BMW Combat Cup, the 116 Cup, I think, now. And said, look, can I borrow your trailer? I bought a car in Swindon. So we went to Thruxton, picked the trailer up, went up to Swindon, and this bloke drove this Model T out. And I thought, well, there's no point test driving it because I can't drive one. Yeah. So I just went, does it work? He went, yeah. I said, well, drive onto the trailer. I'll give you some money. And off we went. And it turned out the guy had done no maintenance at all in like the 20 years they'd owned it. I mean, the bill was black and it was just lots of things needed adjusting.
Did you say he took the battery with him?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I paid him the money, put the car on the trailer, hoiked the battery out and said, see you later. I said, why? He said, oh, I only put the battery in it to put it on the trailer. It's not included in the sale. I was like, all right, mate, see you later then.
Yeah, okay, cool.
Lucky I'm not driving it home then.
Yeah. Can I get one Eurocar parts?
Yeah, or? I just, you know, it was, I mean, as it happened, the battery was just balanced on the back seat with a couple of leads on it. But, you know, I kind of, you know, you kind of expect a car to come with a battery.
Yeah.
You
know, it might, battery's not included.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It might be a really shit battery, but it should still come with a battery.
Yeah.
So, you know, we got it home and then we got CCTV cameras at home, which on the ring, and my wife messaged me as we were unloading this. My son and I were unloading this thing at home, and I just got, what have you bought now?
Okay, so that's a few of the cars you've got at the moment. What was your first car?
My first car was a Land Rover Series 2A.
Wow. Okay, so you're
109.
Left field.
I have a theory. Mm. Anyone that starts with an English car is destined to carry on with them forever.
Yep.
I believe this. It's like Rory, even though Rory didn't have it. But like, anyone that starts on the path of dealing with English shite goes, I'll live with this forever.
If it gets in the veins early, it's in there forever. It's sticking around for life.
I grew up in the countryside. It was natural for me to... But again, naively, I wanted a car, and my parents said, you know, you should buy yourself a Golf or something like that. And I went, no, I'm going to buy a really shit old Land Rover. And we went, my mum and I went to buy this thing, not knowing anything and being very naive, and bought this 1960 something, and I still have it.
Really?
Yeah, it's in a shed at my parents' house, and we do
That's
plan
cool.
on restoring
That's
it at
so
some point.
Cool.
I mean, it's only been 28 years or something. but we got it back, and this thing was a big pile of shit. You know, it broke down every time we drove it. And then grew up near Dunsfold Land Rovers, took it in, and they just ran me up. They ran my mum up and said, look, your son's car, you could put your fist through the chassis at points. It's just, you know. Then I bought a Golf. So a 1.8 GL.
Ooh,
which
nice.
Which I put TSW Venom alloys on.
Oh, yeah.
See, that's, you know what? Now I know why I love Charlie. Yeah. No, this makes sense.
And a Super Sprint exhaust.
No, nice. that's the real first car, really. Yeah.
Back when Super Sprint exhausts were affordable.
Yeah.
I went to the Guildford Cruise.
Was it Mark 2?
No, Mark 3.
Was it Mark 3 on Venoms?
Yeah. I just look at it. I have a picture of it somewhere, and I just look at it now and go, what were you thinking? But back then, you know, it was fine. And my best friend at the time had a 405 MI16. So we tooled around in those. I started working after that when I was 19. I'd already been working part-time, but I started full-time in IT. And I bought myself a E36 323 coupe.
Nice.
Which was
so that was the beginning of the BMW bug.
That was the BMW bug. And my mum said, "You'll crash that."
And you went, "Yeah, all right, you're on."
And lo and behold, I was at in Hatfield, outside the university there, and I driving along quite happily, and a lady in a quite frankly immaculate 16 valve Mark II anniversary pulled straight out in front of me, and I T-boned her.
Because you wanted to.
Sped
up.
The car it was a bit of a mess, but they did fix it, and I did get it back, and I kept it for a couple of years. Then I had a company car, which was a Vauxhall Astra.
Nice.
Outer Astra, as we used to call them. And then I think I had that for about a year. I'd moved out of house, my parents' house by this point. Went back for Christmas Day. I arrived on my mother, and she will argue this blind in the face, demanded the rent by odor from when I lived there. So I hopped in the car and drove to the local village to go to the cash point. And on my way, I was driving too fast. I mean, let's be honest about it. I came around the corner to find that the British Telecom had closed half the road and were working on the lines. And a little old lady in a Volvo was coming the other way on my side of the road. And I put my foot on the brake, skidded, went up the bank, barrel rolled onto the roof.
Nice.
Whereupon the little old lady in the Volvo drove into me.
That's when she accelerated.
So I was in the seat upside down, looked to my left, and there was a Volvo alloy. You know, the ones that came on like the 440s?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
The Volvo, right in the window, was a Volvo alloy. And I went, oh. So I got out of the car and phoned my boss and said, I've just written off your car on Christmas Day. He wasn't very pleased. and he said, you're not having another company car. So I said, okay. So I went and bought myself a Volvo 850 T5 Estate.
You looked there and went, all right, my turn.
Absolutely.
And swap it over.
Which was a car I absolutely adored.
Yeah.
Because we were working in IT, we were doing huge mileages around the country, 75,000 miles a year. But petrol was so cheap back then, you could have an 850. They paid mileage allowance, so you know you could almost make money out of it. It was in red, and I bought it off TGI in Farnham. TGI, who was still there, I think. And I absolutely adored that car. And sadly, after a couple of years, the turbo went on it. And instead of actually getting it fixed, which is what I should have done, I part exchanged it for a 406 SRI.
Oh, that's tough.
Which is the 8-valve.
Yeah.
Which is possibly the worst car I've ever owned. I mean, the thing was a big pile of shit. And in the meantime, I'd bought myself an E36 M3.
Oh, nice.
Evo in Estoril Blue.
Oh, okay.
As a toy.
Yeah.
And my mum said, you'll crash that. And lo and behold, there's a running theme here.
Yeah.
Lo and behold, I was driving back after work one night from the Farnham to Hindhead Road, which is quite a twisty road. It goes south of Farnham all the way down to the Hindhead. There used wasn't a tunnel back then, but it would where the tunnel is. With two friends in the car in an E36 M3 and slippery roads.
Recipe for disaster.
Driving too fast. And people say, you know, you shouldn't, young people shouldn't drive fast cars because they'll crash them. And in my case, very true. And I came around the corner, lost the back end, and it straightened up and went straight up at an 8-foot earth bank. And it went up about 10 foot in the air, the whole car. We were doing about 80 by 80 miles, way too quick. And it came down on its roof and it barrel rolled down the road. I mean, there was just bits of bodywork everywhere. We came to a stop. And the three of us looked around and we were all totally uninjured.
Really?
We got some cuts from getting out the car with all the glass. There wasn't a single panel on the car that was not dented or glass. You know, it was a whole lot gone. And we got out and the police arrived and said, you know, where are the people in the car? Have they gone to hospital? And we're like, no, we're here. And the traffic officer arrived, he said, if you hadn't bounced up the bank and gone into something hard, he said, I would be looking at going to the scene. So I phoned my mother and she said, I told you so. And then I bought a Subaru Legacy GTB.
Oh, those are nice. Yeah. Which you still, is it that
no,
same car?
No, actually a friend still owns it. But that is where the rolling road started.
Well, that's going to be my next question. What? How did that come about?
I quit, basically. Yeah. It was the good years of IT. It was from sort of 99 to 2005. You
know,
they were very good years. I didn't have any dependents, and I thought, you know, if I'm going to start business on my own, now is the time to do it. I left the business, not a clue what I was going to do. I just literally went one day to my boss. I said, look, I'm going.
Yeah.
And he went, thank you very much. Mm-hmm. I had the Subaru, and I got into like the Subaru tuning scene slightly. I was interested in it, and I had a chap who serviced it, and he wanted to expand. It was right around the time when Subaru tuning was getting really big. Mm. And there were loads, it was about 2004, you know, loads of tuning packages, mapping had become big and, you know, and everything. So
Charlie's the origin of stage tuning. He's ruined it all for the rest of us.
Stage tuning was you know, that's when it became a thing, you know, stage one, stage two, stage three. Does anybody know what it means? No one's got clue still 20 years later. I said to the guy, look, you know, if we want to start a business together, doing Subaru tuning, you know, I'll put the money up and, you know, we'll get a big unit and we'll do all this. And we spent about 6 months planning it. And it became apparent during it that the chap who I won't mention, but lovely guy, a little bit unhinged in terms of not mentally, just generally his life.
I guess you'd have to be to work on Subarus though.
Yeah. And it, like things like you turn up, he just disappear for 3 days. And after a while it became apparent, and I'm very glad that it happened, that it just wasn't going to work.
Yeah.
And while doing the business plan, we kind of worked out that we could make more out of the dyno than we could out of the ramps.
Interesting.
So I went and bought a dyno.
And here you are.
basically, me and my two best friends, we got shit-faced in the pub one night. And at the end of it, next morning, I bought a dyno for £100,000 from Australia. And didn't have a unit to put it in or anything. No business plan. No, nothing at all. Took a small loan to, you know, got a big loan actually, to buy it. And thought, okay, so we rented a unit in Camberley, I rented a unit in Camberley. And we were just going to be an independent rolling road, you know, cause at the time, lots of garages had bought rolling roads, you know, and there was a big thing. Dynos were a big thing. Most of the tuners were buying them. And I thought, well, I'll be Mr. Independent, you know, I'll be the guy in the middle who doesn't give a shit what your car makes as long as I'm honest.
Yeah.
You know, we got a unit in Camberley, which was way too small, you know, and it was between two other businesses, and we built a soundproof cell, which was mainly made out of steel and sort of rubber blocks. Mm. And we didn't know what we were doing, and it was three mates, and we were mostly powered by Big Tasties. And we made this cell. And I mean, the doors, when you open the doors, they'd sort of fall off. It was just so Heath Robinson. And we opened it up and the response was absolutely huge. You know, we had Dyno Day booking straight away, you know.
Were you one of the first to do that, where you could just rock up to a dyno?
Power Engineering in Uxbridge had been doing it a long time. And G-Force in Aylesbury had been doing dyno days for a long time. And they actually had a Dynodynamics dyno, which is the dyno I bought. And I actually, they were very useful to point me in the right direction of what dyno to get. But there were only a few in the country.
So the concept, for those listening that don't know, you run the rolling road where you can rent it for a full day of tuning on your car, but you run days, which is always Saturdays?
Yeah, so Saturdays. So things are... Things are slightly, where I run the business is slightly different now from back then. Back then it was like, we're renting a building, we're paying business rates, you know, we need to get some money in quickly.
Yeah.
So it was like 30 quid a car for the clubs.
Yeah.
But it was all internet forums back then. There was no Facebook or anything. Mm. So, and the internet forums, they like ScoobyNet and everything, they all did dyno days. And I did 50 a year, sometimes 70 dyno days a year.
You know, how many cars would turn up?
Anything from 20 to 40 cars.
Wow. So you're getting through. So basically, Charlie would stick a car on the dyno, tell you your power figure, onto the next one.
Yeah.
So you have that printout piece of paper for all your mods. Because it's the early 2000s. You don't have a list of mods on a Reddit thread that tells you exactly how much power your car's going to make. No. It's people guessing mods and then working out how much power their car makes after.
Guessing badly most of the time. So we started up and it was very successful. It didn't make any money, you know, I mean, because I didn't really have the tuners in the week. So it was only the weekends we were doing and it wasn't really making any money. I mean, I was young and didn't really need a lot to live on, luckily, but it was about 2-3 years before it started making any money. And then I started to get to know particularly Subaru tuners. So Patrick Herborn, who's a Subaru tuner, he came down to map a car that one of my dyno customers had got a mapper in. So he rented the dyno for a few hours. And I got to know Pat, the late, great Simon Rowe, who Jolly Green Monster, I got to know him. And after 2 or 3 years, I was still doing, I was sort of 2007 to 2010, I had the dyno in use 3 or 4 days a week. We were doing 13 Subarus, mapping 13 Subarus a day at a time, probably, which in hindsight was probably too many, if I'm honest. You know, we and then we'd do 20 cars on a Saturday, and sometimes we'd come in and do 15 more on a Sunday. And they were very good years, and then it started making some decent money.
Yeah.
And then we've continued that really over the next 17 years. The only difference now is after COVID, I have another business as well, which I'll get into in a minute if you haven't all fallen asleep. that business has been really expanding over the last few years. So I took the decision over COVID that the mappers who I'd been sitting next to for the past 10, 15 years, driving on the dyno for them all day while they map cars, because of COVID, we couldn't do that. So they decided to drive on the dyno. So after COVID, I really established that they could just pay me the money for the renting the dyno could sit upstairs and count it, you know. And from that moment on, I don't do any dynoing during the week. I've got 3-4 mappers, a chap called Chris Todd. He does a lot of old Ford stuff. In fact, Chris does anything. He's very good as well. Duncan Graham, who does Subarus.
Race Dynamics?
Yep, Race Dynamics.
We used him at Overdrive.
You did?
He came to you guys.
Yes, you did. It was a few years ago.
Yeah.
Tim Cox, who does Subarus. And I've got a couple of other guys as well who visit. And they've got keys.
They
just turn up, and then
we'll get a set of those from you, Charlie, later.
I'll put the Cadillac on, you know.
you have some dino related questions, right, Charlie?
Oh, there are a few. Hold the line. I'm just bringing them up. Now, we've obviously had our Cadillac on the dyno, which I'm going to assume is one of the worst you've ever had. But have you ever had a really bad dyno fail? Something that's blown up or something along those lines?
I think we're approaching 20,000 cars now. We've done in 20 years. Yes, there have been some classics. I used to do dyno days for the Passion Ford.
Okay.
Yeah.
Lovely people.
Yeah.
I say that because I'm probably about to offend most of them.
Yeah.
Because you could buy a SAF for probably about $5,000 back then. And unlike where the love is lavished on them, and the cars are being restored and they're very, very nice, a lot of them back then were complete shitters. You know, and a dyno day, you'd have at least one head gasket go on a YB. You know, barely mean they drove there.
Yeah.
We had an alternator fall off. That was quite fun.
Nice.
Because that'd be bolted on properly. The bolt fell out. The alternator fell off on the mid dyno run. I had a wheel fall off a Ferrari race car.
Wow.
That hadn't been bolted up.
While it was on
the dyno, while spinning.
On the rear.
Yep. Luckily, the wheel went up into the wheel arch. Fuck the wheel arch, but it didn't do any damage to the dyno. I have had the little O-ring at the top of a Subaru oil filter on a drag car blow out at 8,000 RPM, and the whole lot went up. It was still on fire 10 minutes later when we pulled out the dyno.
Wow.
Some of them were quite scary. I mean, you can also tell in those situations, you could tell who are your friends. Yeah, because it was... when we tended to do the big stuff back in the day, it would tend to be in the evenings and you'd have lots of mates around and everyone would be watching around. And the people who ran away didn't get invited back, you know, because you get a couple of mates, you grab the fire extinguishers and actually try and put the fire out. And you see one of your mate of 20 years off down the road. I've seen most things. We've had engines. I mean, generally during dyno days these days, certainly, it's incredibly rare for a mechanical failure because generally they're cars that are used. When cars are being mapped, okay, you do get a failure. I mean, bottom end's going, so blowing rods through blocks, stuff like that. You know, it does happen.
I was going to say, I mean, if you cut your teeth on Subarus, you've seen every car blow up that you could have.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I've seen bits of Subaru engine eject out of most of Subaru, but apart from Subaru, out the front, out the back, out the top. Evo rod snapping. Seen that before.
Oh yeah. Snapping, but you know about that.
I had my Evo on. Actually, I was going to say I've had a few of my cars on your, like, I think it was a £40 Saturday at the time.
Yep.
But I used to go there all the time. Yeah. It was just the thing that it was like, if I got out of car, or people had a car, they'd go, I want to know how much power it makes.
I remember
you make mods and
the amount of times at Car Throttle that Will would come in after a weekend went, well, it was Charlie's on the weekend. Found out how much car found my car made.
It's just great. I remember I went with my friend, actually, again, this is Ford. He had a Focus ST that he'd been told was running 350 horsepower on a standard turbo. And I warned him at the time, probably not. And we both came to one of your days and he strapped it to the dyno. I think it made 300 horsepower. And you told him, it's very unlikely that your car will be making that. He's like, nope, I'm stage 9.5 and I've been told it's 350 horsepower. So it's quite good seeing those days. You can really put some people down.
I was going to say, this is one of the questions we have on there, is which owners do you love telling the most that they made less power? Now, they're not necessarily the worst customer, but they are people that you're like, come on, it's not going to be what you think it is?
So over the years, things that the dynamic, obviously I still do the Saturdays and I pretty much only on the, only, you only find me on the dining on a Saturday for that. Cause I still enjoy it amazingly. I don't know why, but after 20 years and B, there's still a demand to do it.
Yeah.
But the cars I do have changed, you know, back, you know, in the late 2000s, early 20s, it was all Jap cars, you know, 200 SXs, Subarus, Evos, you know, it was all Jap stuff. And the occasional E36 M3 and everything. Well, I do a lot of random stuff now, but a lot of it's German. You know, M140s.
Oh, so I was waiting for it.
And Golf R's.
NS3s.
Yeah. You know, and Golf R's. And I probably do 250 M140s a year. You know, they're just ubiquitous. I mean, they're very good. I can't really argue it.
Do you go to sleep with B58 just stuck in your head?
Oh, it's a great engine. It is a great engine.
Going stage one, stage two, decat, stage one.
I usually tell them what it's going to make with a stage one or stage two before they go on the dyno. Yeah, and most of the time I'm right. But who do I like disappointing?
Other than TDC?
Vauxhall owners.
Okay.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, because they invariably, especially the Corsa VXRs, you know, they'll come in and they'll go, I've done this, and it's this power. And I'll sit there and go, I don't think so. And then it doesn't. I go, right. And then they start going, and it's not, I'm not slagging off all Vauxhall. Yeah, yeah. I essentially have one. It's like, you know, you try and impress on people the mindset, you know, you're paying for a service. I don't give a shit what your car makes. Yeah. You know, I will do my job to the best of my ability, you know, to give you an honest reading of your car. If it isn't what your expectation is, it's not my problem.
No, yeah.
You know, I had a guy recently, actually, and I'm not going to name the car because he probably watches the channel, and he's a nice chap. Didn't make what it should have done, the car. It was supercharged. He went off and actually went to another dyno. Where it made less.
He wanted a second opinion.
Oh, it made less.
Yeah, it made less.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And he went back to the tuner who blamed the dyno. Yeah.
Okay.
And then he went back to the tuner again and they found eventually, actually, that there was quite a colossal boost leak. And it came back fairly recently and made exactly what it should make.
But that's the use. Is it's not a vanity thing. It's a health check.
Absolutely.
It's to work out if your car's working as it should.
The figure at the top, the power figure at the top, is one of the most meaningless things.
Yeah.
And I say that, and I know it sounds strange for me as running a dyno. Yeah. You're looking at where I'm looking, but the customer's normally looking at the figure at the top.
Yeah.
I'm looking at the torque curve. I'm looking at the fueling curve. You know, I'm looking at the power curve, the shape of the power curve.
Yeah.
I'm looking for any indentations in the power curve because it usually, you know, dead or misfire. All of those things are important to me, and it's my job to impart that to the customer when they're sitting there going,
big number bear,
you know, because you can get cars that make huge power that aren't very fast because they make it somewhere up there,
yeah,
you know, and then you get big lazy things that make loads of torque and no power, you know, diesels, you know, it's that's the job, but I still try, you know, I'm still interested by it, I still enjoy what I do, you know, will there become a time where I'm not interested in and give up and leave the country. Probably at some point, just not yet.
As long as we've got keys by then, that'd be fine. That'd be okay.
I remember seeing an MX-5. This was actually a Devil Developments dyno day. They did like a Ford one. But in the middle, they did a couple of random cars like Saabs and whatever. But there was a Mark II MX-5 that went on, 1.6. And I've never seen a more disappointing dyno graph. It went up and then just went flat all the way along. And it was both torque and power. Yeah. It was... I looked at it, I thought I would sell that car instantly after that.
Didn't you say the guy was quite, he was like okay with it?
No, he was, I was like, oh, that's great, that's perfect. But it's quite funny seeing a dyno. One, it's incredibly stressful to watch.
Oh, it is.
It's like watching someone stress test your nan in front of you. Like it's just stretching her out.
Hold it there!
And making it, it's like watching someone do a health check in front of you. They're on the treadmill sprinting and running and the car is screaming because you never see your car.
But that's
you never see your car in that condition. Your car's doing 100 and something mile an hour according to its head.
If you do a big, obviously you do it in the correct gear for as close to one-to-one. So it's usually a higher speed anyway, but like if you do one big pull in your car, it's the exact same as it being on the dyno. Yeah, yeah. But yet when you see it on the dyno, you're like, no, that's too much.
That's going to go bang. Yeah. Surely that's going to go bang. And then you also have the stress of, oh, it hasn't made the number I wanted, or the something's not right. But yeah, the dyno number thing is always a thing that I always have to explain to people, that don't worry too much about the number. Yeah. So it's also really good for a before and after as well. As long as like you come to I did it with my Evo with you before I had some bits done. I came to you before, it made 380 or whatever, then you come after and it makes a different number, but the power, the curve is different.
Yeah.
So it's good for that.
A dyno is a tool. Yeah. You know, it doesn't affect, dyno is not there to hurt your feelings. You know, don't feel offended by it. Yeah. It's there as a tool, either as a tool for tuning cars, or as a tool just literally, you know, I get quite a few guys with Elise Series 1s who fit cams, the K-Series.
Yeah.
And they'll do it before and after. They go away, do the cams, you know. And we can overlay the two graphs and see where you've gained and where you haven't. And things like that, it works really, really well for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's things, some stuff these days you can't dyno, you know, or I can't dyno. PDK box 901s.
And that's because, is that because of
the front wheels have to be moving?
Yeah, I mean, we had a sort of similar thing with the Crossfire, which is not even that modern. Really.
Same thing. Yeah, I mean, certain cars, a lot of the newer dynos have links, so the front wheels turn and the back wheels turn at the same. Mm. You can run them on those, but on the Porsche, unless the front wheels are moving and the PDK, like 901 onwards, they won't go into third gear.
Wow.
So probably someone somewhere has found a way of making it happen, but I haven't yet. Mm. That kind of rules them out. But I get asked about them. Someone says, well, why don't you find a way of doing it? It's like the same as the 911 turbos. Very difficult to keep cool. Mm. Unless you have big fans at the back, you know, they're very difficult to keep cool. And when they're hot, you don't make the numbers.
Yeah.
So as a result, I just don't do them. And someone said, well, why don't you get all the fans to do them? And I'm like, because for the two cars I get asked,
exactly.
It just isn't worth it.
Have you ever refused a car from going on the dyno? Someone's come with a car and gone, you've gone no.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, at least two or three times a year.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What does it tend to be that you...
Generally, if the smoke coming out the back before it goes on the dyno, it's not a good sign. I mean, I've had cars turn out on three, you know, or not on all six. I've had and when there's oil leaking out the bottom fast and it's going in... you can hear big ends rattling outside. It's easier just to go, I'm not dynoing that. You know, it's just not worth it.
No, yeah.
I don't want to clean the mess up.
Uh-oh. Oh, Cadillac might not be going on the dyno after all.
Well, to be fair, on the Cadillac.
Yes.
What is the slowest / lowest power car you've had on the dyno, and then the highest power car? Because I know you've got, there was a picture at the dyno, which I think is a Subaru, but I don't know, what is the highest power car you've ever had on there?
So that was an R30. The one on the wall is a Subaru drag car, which we made about, I think, 1,000 something with them without the nitrous. And that was actually done, but I wasn't there when that was done. That was done by a friend of mine. And because he's a friend of mine and likes to take the piss, he framed it and put it up on the wall. And it's still there many years later. The highest car I've ever done would have been an R35 GTR back when the R35 was launched and the big tuning wars started.
Hmm.
And again, there weren't that many dynos around. So it was, you know, they used to come and use me. And they're an absolute twat to dyno, the R35. Again, link dyno situation. If the back wheels and the front wheels aren't moving at the same speed, the four-wheel drive, how does it kick out? So then they're not, I don't do them anymore, mainly because I can't bother. But, you know, back then it was a thing. And, you know, and when you're trying to push a business forward, you'll kind of push yourself, you'll do stuff.
Yeah.
And these things would have like 8 straps on them. Mm. And we had one that did 1380, I think.
Jesus.
And it was mid-pull. I mean, the four-drive clutch is kicked out. And that was a bit scary. I've done loads of Holdens and stuff at like 900, 1,000. I did one of the, I think it was Andy Robinson's cars, which was a green Barracuda drag car, and this thing's like 2,500 horsepower. Yeah, and it arrived and it fired up, and I went outside the unit, I just looked at it and went, shit. You know, I'm sitting there going, this needs like a big American dyno jet or something. Yeah. It's not suitable for my dyno. Got in this thing and I just like scared the shit out of me, quite frankly. got it on the dyno, put 8 straps on it, loaded it up, and it just snapped all 8 straps. Just drove off the dyno. Didn't go very far because, as I explained to people, on your dyno, the car's got no inertia.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if it comes off, you just put your foot on the brake. As long as you stop the wheels moving, it won't go anywhere. Yeah. You know, and it did. But after that, I just went, I think it still made about 900 horsepower, even just at that. And I just went, you know what? I'm going home to change my pants. I suppose these days I do choose and pick.
Yeah. That's the beauty.
I won't do dining. The only thing I still do during the week is the historic stuff. Mm. I do the Cobras and GT40s and bits of Reedies and stuff for various historic race teams. One of the reasons is they arrive with a big truck. They put the car on the dyno. You do one run in like 10 million quid's worth of GT40, which still gives me a buzz.
Yeah.
And then they go, right, can you give us a couple of hours? We just want to change some things.
Yeah.
So you wander off for a couple of hours and you come back, Charlie, would you mind giving us another run, please? And you give them another run. Mm. And this is all day. And I still, the historic stuff, I still love doing.
I guess, yeah, that versus I've got a wicked stage 2+ map on it. Can you give me 7 runs until I get 400 horse? It's a little bit nicer than that.
It's a little bit different. But they arrive with mechanics and everything.
Yeah.
I mean, it's probably, the owner of the car is probably going to charge $3,000 or $4,000 a day for this because they've got the mechanics and everything.
Yeah.
But I really do enjoy the stuff. We've done some, over the years, we've got a lot of stuff I can't talk about, but we've done some really nice cars.
Yeah.
And they tend to, the owners never come.
Yeah.
So it's just the mechanics and everyone else. The owner's probably on his holiday yacht in Barbados or somewhere. Yeah. So you get a lot of banter, you just have a little bit of fun. It's serious because obviously there's a lot of money at stake.
Mm.
But the noise of a open piped GT40 at 7,000 RPM is something. I did a 512. I did the Daytona winning 512S for about 15 years ago. And when we were in Longcross, when we were in the old unit at Longcross Studios, we had the doors open. And I had a noise complaint from 5 miles away on Wentworth Estate that night. It was the loudest thing I've ever done.
I was going to say, it's pretty good that you're next to an airport now.
Yeah, because we've got a cell. I mean, the cell we're in now is the third iteration of designing cells for dinos.
Yeah.
And I still it up. You know, it's you learn every time you do it. And there's things that I would have done differently.
Yeah.
But it is a lot. I mean, I spent some money on that. You know, I mean, the doors were like $8,000 or something just for the doors, because I had to.
Yeah.
But the difference is now, and the best thing I ever did was after I got kicked out of Longcross in 2014, I bought the unit I'm in now.
Yeah.
And it's the best thing I ever did because A, you're paying a mortgage, you're not paying
rent.
Yeah. And B, no one can tell me what to do. You know, so, I mean, we're next to an airport, next to a diamond cutting place that makes loads of noise anyway. It's really the best thing I ever did, because otherwise we'd still be bloody renting. Hmm. And I'd probably go through another premises because landlords hate diners. They hate,
yeah.
I mean, landlords hate the motor train, let's face it.
Hmm. Yeah, don't you know about that.
You know, so it's to your only destiny. And like I said, it's really, you know, business-wise, the best decision.
Have you got, are there any other ones on the dyno list?
I think that's about it.
I have one.
Oh, here we go. Ben's got one.
You said your most powerful car was like 1300, right? What is how much could you put on that? Is there a limit?
So let's think about the S2000.
I'm thinking it's a 9000.
Well, the problem is there's not a torque limit. So it's not really a problem with the S2000.
Is there a minimum torque limit?
Well, we're about to find out. I mean, the dynos are rated at 2,500 horsepower.
Okay.
Yeah. That's actually is what it can break in terms of the retarders on the dyno, what they can break. The problem is not with these type of dynos, it's not what the dyno can handle. It's the tires.
Mm.
Yeah. So there are obviously things have moved on. You've got other types of dynos. You've got the hub dynos, which are very good for the big pad stuff. They use them a lot in the Middle East, a lot in America. You've got the big old dyno jets, which the Americans love, but they've got much bigger rollers. So you've got the tires, so you can actually run more power. So in terms of mapping a car, if you said I want to map 1,000 horsepower car, I'd just say go to a hub dyno.
Mm.
Yeah, you know, or one of the big dyno jets, because it's so much easier to do and you won't have the wheel spin problems.
Yeah.
Yes, I can power run it. You know, yes, I can get a reading off it. But if you're going to repeatedly do runs, you'll just melt the tires. And once the tires get too hot, it's game over.
Mm. But no micro car on Charlie's Dyno. We'll overload it.
I like that dynos have a power limit, but it's like, so someone comes to you and says, what's the limit? And you go, it's 2,500. You go, how much power are you running? Well, I don't know. That's why I'm
to Charlie. I was hoping you could tell me.
So I've got to put it on the dyno to find out it's making 3,000 horsepower and I need a new dyno.
Yeah. Excellent. It's when you strap them down and you sit there and you go, right, okay, we're all good. Good, right, let's put it in gear and you put your foot down. And then you first run and it just goes like that. And you're like, oh, might have had some wheel spin on that run. Because in the winter, the tires are cold and the rollers are cold. So you have to get some heat into the tires for them to grip.
Yeah.
In the summer, it's less of a problem. You can very easily, I don't know whether it's just experience, you can kind of tell if a car isn't very powerful on the dyno by the way it's sort of sitting and the way it's reacting. If you put your foot down and it just sits there and goes, you're still going to sit there and go, this is pretty shit. If it sits there and just wheel spins his ass off, you're like, well, it's got some beans.
Yeah.
Now, speaking of big power.
I thought you were going to say, speaking of beans.
So I haven't even mentioned beans just yet, but maybe we'll get on to that. For the audio listeners, there is next to Charlie and Edwin quite a big bottle on the floor.
Yes. Now, it was in the last episode, but not for this. Now, it's actually something we need to speak to you off camera. We have mentioned it, but we have a plan for the Cadillac to restore some power to it.
Yep. Well, I've just seen it in the car park. It's rusting away.
It's that will be the car's final movement. Yeah. The engine we will take with.
Yep.
If it survives. Yeah. We have a plan to put it in something English. Mm. Old and English. It's going to be a Jag.
Yeah.
We want to put that Cadillac engine in a Jag with maybe some different heads. And make somewhat of a burnout machine. We want a TDC burnout car.
Entertainment car.
Yeah. So that because that engine is so horrific. When we brought it to you, it made 115 horsepower from 500 cubic feet.
Is it?
Absolutely ridiculous. Just ridiculous.
And for anyone who's an enthusiast for American cars listening, we're not selling the car because it is so rusty. It's been sat for a year, right, since we did the video, and which is a long time, but it's not been sat in a field, it's been sat in a car park, and it is significantly more hot.
It has got much,
Charlie, you're a connoisseur of shit cars. Yeah. Would you let anyone drive that car on the road?
God, no.
Yeah, that car.
It's beyond anything.
It's incredibly dead. You can see through from the outside into the back seat. From the outside, you can look through the rear quarter through three different layers of metal to the back seats.
It's behind the B pillar when we picked it up, or at the bottom of the B pillar, where the actual chassis is. There was just a hole there, and no one's moved it. No one's touched it.
It hasn't moved at all. It's just sat still, and it just fell into itself.
It's the hole on the accelerator pedal I particularly
I do like that. Because I moved it the other day, and when I went to hit the accelerator, the pedal moved so much with the flex of the metal that I over accelerated, so I jumped back. I was like, Jesus.
Whoa, 115 horsepower.
We better watch out.
Although potentially a little bit more, actually, now. We've had some timing bits.
That's what we're going to look at. We
might have cracked 120.
Surely not.
But with a little something up his nose.
Yeah.
He might make a bit more.
Yeah, you're going to have some righteous in it.
Yeah. So downstairs is Surrey Rolling Road, but you have something quite cool upstairs.
I do. Massive pornography collection.
That wasn't untrue, by the way. It's not untrue.
No. Going back to I mentioned earlier the other business. So through one of the mappers I met through the Subaru business was a chap called Patrick Herborn, who extremely good calibrator. And he was showing me some ECU stuff back then. It was about 2007. I thought it was very interesting. I said, why don't we potentially do some ECU stuff with the business, this business? But they were primarily race-based, LMP cars, stuff like that. Would they be interested in working with us to develop a road car version for all the stuff? Because a lot of the stuff out there was complete shit back then.
And so that's like a standalone ECU run a car on?
Primarily for Subarus, it was okay. You had the thing called a six row link, which is basically six rows of the thing, and they were shocking. We went to them with a cap in hand and said, look, do you want to do this? Thinking they'd tell us to fuck off, quite frankly. And they said yes. so we started off in the business plan. I mean, and on all best business plans, it was made in a curry house in Nap Hill in Woking.
Nice.
because we shared many curries back.
I was going to say, actually, that is how TDC started. We went for a curry.
It's a bit all the best businesses that started the curry house. And so we started off and we bumbled along for a couple of years. And we sold maybe, I think, 50, 100 ECUs a year. We did a general purpose version of the Subaru boards, yeah. The plug and play boards. We started going to Supras. And through the Supras and MR2, I had a young, cocky lad. It came in called Ryan Griffiths. Or Ryan G, as he'd like to be called now. We still take the piss of me. He'll hate that I mentioned that, by the way. So he was mapping at mine anyway. So he was about 10 years old. He must have been in early 20s at the time. He, after a while, decided to, he got quite involved with us. And he bought himself an R35 GTR, one of the first ones. And then after a while, we developed a kit with him him and Pat developed the kit completely on their own. I think it took Motec 2 years to do a kit for the R35. We did it in 6 weeks. And we made a load of these kits. We did a rather poor, in my opinion, still deal with an American dealer to sell them. We sold a lot of them. And then Ryan became part of Syvex. He became, which is the business. I should have mentioned that probably. So it was originally called Solaris.
Well, I was going to say, if you're into modifying cars, especially in the UK, you have heard Syvex.
Yeah.
Syvex is like focuses, lots of focuses.
Even if you don't know the ins and outs of what a Syvex is, many of you will have heard big power car.
It's running.
Then the Syvex. R35s, Focus RS, lots of different
Subarus,
cars.
Lots of Subarus.
You hear Syvex and I go, whoa.
Oh, okay. Hold on.
you spent some money on that thing.
You're serious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Over the years, Ryan joined, and over the years we did the R35. We started developing our kits. We started developing our own products. So almost 18 years later, we're still going. We're growing, still growing. We do all sorts of cars now. We do things that we primarily specialize in, things like with the 8YRS3. We did loads of kits because you can map those, but only if you change one of the chips in the ECU. We do kits for still the R35, still sell kits for the R35.
I was gonna say, you see lots of the drag cars, and I've seen on, I don't know if this is a recent thing, but where obviously it's a four-wheel drive car, the R35, but people like to use it for drag racing.
Yep.
But they now, ones with Syvex, can go rear-wheel drive for a burnout.
Yes.
And then back to four-wheel drive.
Yep. So we do little four-wheel drive controllers, which just do that. You don't even need to buy the ECU. Yeah. I mean, we like it if you buy the ECU. we've probably got 200 or 300 products now.
Yeah.
And I've got a team of staff. Ryan decided that he didn't like the UK anymore and now lives in Dubai.
Nice.
Where he concentrates on developing the products. From the technical side, Pat Burborn and I, we're all still involved. I do the sales and run the business side of things. So if you have had an abusive email from the sales address at Syvex, it was probably me.
What? No, that doesn't sound like you, Charlie.
And it's one of those things that it started off literally as two blokes in a curry house, as a bit of a let's see how this goes. And it's why I don't do the dyno generally during the week anymore, because it's my full time job. All of us, it's our full time jobs, and we really enjoy doing it. It's a real challenge, and it works. We all have our own specialities. Mine's mainly that we don't go to prison,
that's Ben's job for us.
It's growing, and it is my primary focus now.
Yeah.
Just to develop new products. We've just literally released we've got a couple of new Bluetooth units and GPS and track logging software and things we've just released. Have a look at the website or Facebook or Instagram or whatever you look at. But yeah, and that's where it went. It was all three of us look back and think, how the hell has it been this successful over the years?
Will and I have actually had this conversation before where we said, if the day that TDC has something Syvex is the day we've made it.
Yeah,
that's when we're really building something cool.
Microcars getting real good.
Well, if you stop buying shit cars, then I'm sure we can put Syvex on.
We'll never be in contact then. No.
Always on the Focuses, because that was the kind of thing that was the first time I ever saw that it was big power Focus RSs, is that they were able to, like, things like traction control systems were way more advanced compared to the standard Ford one on cars over 500-600 horsepower, but you'd always hear it.
Yeah. Mm.
Whenever you hear a really big power focus RS taking off, you can hear the traction control cutting in.
That was Lee at Devils.
Yeah.
So Lee, because obviously, I mean, this the core team, the three of us, and there's people who work for us, and all have made a massive contribution. But there's a lot of friends and tuners over the years, certainly in the early days, who came along to us and went, wait, so you're making an ECU? Mm. I'm specializing in this, or I'm specializing in that. Can I do an ECU? And with Lee, it was the Mark II Focus.
Yeah.
And I met Lee because he kept bringing really shit Fords to my dyno. and then they'd fall apart on the dyno.
Yeah.
And he decided to get his own dyno. Because he'd had enough of me. I don't blame him, to be honest. And he at that point, he said, you know, can we do an ECU for the Mark II Focus? And we said, absolutely. And that Lee at SRD was another one. With the Supras.
Yeah.
Again, he was somebody who was one of Ryan's customers. And him and a chap called Jamie P wanted a...
Jamie P, we'd like to get on the podcast. He will be at some point.
Yep. Lovely man. Has had many Cyvexes over the years. And again, it was, I'm building a big pad Supra. I want one of the ECU for it.
Yeah.
And the numerous people, the support of Scooby Clinic up north, which is where Pat was originally working. With all the Subaru stuff, over the years we've had just massive support from. We've had a lot of wankers as well, quite frankly, people who just want to see you fail. But that's the same in every business.
Yeah,
you can't. We try to have a rule that we try never to slag the competition off, because they'll happily slag off us. Because if your products are good enough, they'll speak for themselves.
Well, to be fair, literally an example of character is that I asked you about this Ferrari project, about doing ITBs on it, and you said, don't go with us. Go, you will be better off going with one of the competition.
Yeah, because for the money and what it needs to do, you know, there's simpler solutions out there that will work. You know, the stuff we do is very good. Don't get me wrong. You know, and it's very high end, and it's very technically advanced. But if you just want to run a V12 and ITBs, you know, there are simpler solutions out there without spending like $9,000.
Yeah,
you know, on an ECU. And I've always tried to, over the years, be honest with people about stuff. I don't, you know.
I think from watching, if you've seen any video of Charlie, you know that he is quite honest. I think that's maybe one of the one words I'd describe
up front. Yeah.
Do we have any anecdotes on WhatSuch?
Oh, we got some anecdotes.
Do we?
Starting off with a scary one that I spotted on Instagram that I have to say I've done no further investigation into.
So Ben.
I'm going into Ben territory here.
Hello, Ben.
This is a Mercedes-Benz E63 AMG police car.
That's quite worrying.
And it also has a private private plate as well.
Because all police cars have private plates.
Yeah, yeah. It concerns me. Not that I'm looking to go on a high-speed pursuit anytime soon, but...
Now, isn't one of the things that if they're a real police car, they have to have a number on the rear quarter panel? Isn't that a thing?
Is that a thing?
I think that is. So if they're real, they will have like XP3NL.
So we could be looking at a fake here.
It could be someone doing it for a charity rally.
Again, we're not willing to do the research.
Absolutely not.
We want the audience and the listeners to do it for us. But if I was being chased by that, I'd probably pull over anyway.
Probably been seized from Bradford.
Yeah. That was my first thought. With a private plate.
Seized car, let's slap some Battenberg on it and
off it goes. Off it goes, chasing down RS3s.
Especially because there's a sort of the, not really a myth, but with police cars being tuned. Mm. Is that they've got a stage one E63.
They've got wrench horse on the E63.
got a 700 horsepower E63 rocking around the streets.
Although, to be for intimidation tactics, way better than like a Corsa. Have you seen the electric ones, the little Leafs?
The what?
The police cars are like a Nissan Leaf.
The Lefi, you mean? What's the plural of Leafs, Ben?
Leaves.
Yes, there's a whole argument about the plural of Nissan Leaf.
You know what I mean? When you see one of those, I don't think it scares people off. Running away because they're not very quick and they run out of charge. Whereas if you see that, you're thinking twice. Yeah,
if I was an unhinged criminal, I'd see it as a challenge.
Oh, okay.
Interesting.
That's very Will.
Because
that's very Will.
I'd beat that.
But again, like you say, you're in your RS6 or you might have an M5 and think, I don't like AMGs. And you see the AMG police car, you go, what better to race than an AMG police car?
Who tuned it? All right, 1v1 me. Let's go.
Put it on Charlie's dyno. We'll see how much power that makes. But that was quite worrying. It does say it's West Yorkshire, though, so it should be all right.
Ah, we're fine down here.
Yeah,
safe. Fine.
Just Astros and leaves, according to Ben. Some more misinformation, potentially, from me. The Ferrari 612 from Jose Mourinho that I talked about.
But not only... So for the reason that you mentioned before, which is... So the reason that it was a misinformation, is it not the club?
Apparently, I'm very disappointed about this, because I am actually a football fan of sorts, is that apparently it was nothing to do with Inter Milan. It was given to him by Roman Abramovich at Chelsea.
You read a headline and didn't research it.
Crazy.
It wasn't a headline. It was possibly a comment.
And do you know what the other thing is about it?
It's a Sasanta.
It is a Sasanta. We literally said in the thing, is it a normal spec? And we were like, yeah, it's just black. It's not like a stupid special edition, like a Sasanta. And yet here it is. If you don't know, 612 Sasanta has a two-tone, the bonnet, and that's a bonnet and smiley mouth is in a different colour. And yet it is.
Absolutely horrible, don't they?
I'm not a fan of 612.
No, they are.
Oh, the 612 is, I actually think, it's a bit underrated. There was a time when they dropped to late 30s.
Yeah, well, there are still some for that, weren't they? Because Robin of Viking Detail is obsessed with them. He will have one. He has told us he will have one, and we're excited for the day he does. But going through cars for sale. There's a couple still in the 30s.
Are they auto, or is that F1?
I think they're F1. I think they might be. Let's do some research.
They're not dual clutch.
Let's have a look.
I think they're too early.
They're too early for dual clutch. Are they a single clutch?
But I don't know if they're like an, because an auto seems like it would fit it more. But if you've got F1 spec gear changes,
6-speed Graziano automated manual. So it's an F1, then, I think.
Yeah. So it's one of those ones where you put your foot down, pull the pedal, and goes.
Yeah, in your luxury 4-seater Ferrari.
Yeah, but at least he does have the polished wheels, which I like. He has the proper challenge wheels.
I just think they look so gormless.
You know what? It's completely spec dependent, that car. If I see one in a good spec with those wheels, I'm okay with it. And then I see the one with the little 5-spoke wheels. God, what an awful thing. It's the caster wheels thing with the 8 series.
Yeah.
If you get the 850i, the early ones, they look horrible.
It's not a looker, is it?
No.
I mean, the 550 is
I know it.
Yeah. It's got to be one of my favourites, the 550, to be honest.
But also, it's that similar gen to a 599 and sort of similar design language to a
599. Same design language.
But that's like a 599.
It looks like, have you ever seen the, it's like online misinformation photos of, it's like someone, a half man, half sheep has been found somewhere and they look all deformed and weird. Yeah. It's a weird AI slop image.
A 599 has been born with problems.
Yeah, exactly.
And two extra seats.
For a 4-seater Ferrari, the 456.
I see.
Would be mine every time.
456 is good. I actually pop-ups. Quite like a 400. Yeah.
Yeah.
I quite like a 400i.
I think that the thing is with 4-seater Ferraris is they have that period where absolutely no one cares about them.
No one cares.
They get to sort of like 40, 50 years old.
And everyone's like, jumps back in it. Like,
That's what a classic that is.
That's great. Yeah.
I mean, the 456s, I say you buy a bad one, it'll break you. They'll all break you. They're notorious for being
ruinous.
For being absolutely ruinous.
Yeah.
But I think one of those in green, I would love.
There is one of the Brunei wagons was originally green, and that color is amazing in the 456.
Yeah, it's like a dark green. I can't remember what it's called. Green, it's cool, but it's a lovely dark green.
Also, shout out Larry Chen at, it was for Haggerty. He recently put out a video on the Brunei collection. He didn't get to go in the collection, but he got to go to some of the ex-royal family cars that are stored outside the collection, some of the abandoned ones. It's a very good video. For me, I saw it pop up. I was away with my girlfriend for her birthday for the weekend. Mm. She was like, oh, let's sit down and watch that. I went, shh. There's a Brunei video from Larry Chen.
Look what's on.
I have to watch this. So I did. But yeah, very good video.
A bit of misinformation on the old 612 there. Next up, the thing I have written here is the Chris Harris M5, which was kind of revealed this weekend, gone. I guess it'll be a couple of weeks old by this point. If you don't know, Chris Harris of journalism and sliding fame has an E60 M5 or an E61 M5 actually touring, which he spent a lot of money on, I think.
So it was originally a carbon black over black interior
car. Relatively sort of
kind of normal spec.
Yeah.
But now I actually deliberately haven't looked into it because I saw you post this in our chat. So I didn't look into it. But is that BMW British Racing Green? Did it say anywhere? Because there is a BMW E36 where many colours have them.
I didn't write this down.
Oh, okay.
You're going to have to research this.
I am sure that I
Because look at this car.
I might have been on the configurator for BMW the other day on an M3 Touring. Because I was seeing how much you could get one for. And the answer is, they're quite a lot, actually.
Yeah.
And I wanted mine in Daytona Violet to match my E34.
Individual.
Because it's my favorite. It is. That and BMW Avis Blue are my favorite colors. I've got an R33 GTR, which is sprayed in BMW Avis Blue. And all the purists said you can't paint it in a BMW car. It's a Nissan, and I just went, you can.
Also, it's a Nissan. Come on, who cares?
As usual with R33 GTRs, it's currently broken. But I was playing the figure racer, and I did actually come up, and I'm sure one of the individual colors, because you can still.
Prime Video just got even more exciting. ITVX Premium has landed on our subscription service, so you can enjoy your favorite shows via the ITVX Premium subscription, from Coldwater to Love Island.
He had the feeling this was coming.
And that's in addition to all your other favorite subscription services like Apple TV Plus.
If this is an on-the-spot performance review, I have to tell you, I am absolutely killing it right now.
Paramount Plus.
This could be the greatest opportunity in my life.
And Hey You.
You look good.
And so many more. All your subscriptions, all in one place. Prime Video.
Lovely jubbly.
Have your car painted in any of the individual cars that BMW have done. Techno Violet, Daytona Violet, Dakar Yellow. I've got an E36 M3 Evo in that convertible in Dakar Yellow, which is a car that most people absolutely hate.
No,
and I absolutely love, even though it's three shades of different Dakar Yellow, because you can't match the color. But I'm sure on the configurator that was British Racing, a BMW British Racing green still available.
I think it is, because I've seen enough 36s in it, and the shade looks nearly identical. But either way, so that car is now British Racing green gloss, not metallic, but with corduroy red interior. Ben, surely this is your car.
I don't want to speak if I'm in trouble.
You don't like it.
I respect the build.
Do you, is it, oh, okay.
Respect all builds.
No, absolutely not.
No, I don't
what
like.
What is it? Is it that it's gloss?
I think it's because it's not metallic. Mm, it's same as Will's Clio. I would like that if it was in...
Black. So if it was in Oxford, you'd like that
one? Oh.
Okay.
I think
might like that one.
Yeah, but that I saw all the Instagram posts on the weekend, and
Irish green.
It's Irish green. Interesting.
Irish green. I had to delve into Instagram for that one. That could also be misinformation, but four people said so I believe it.
You'd have real problems driving past pubs in that with you without stopping for a Guinness.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's an interesting combination for sure.
It's, I have to say, it's not to my...
Not to your taste?
I love it that people paint things different colours. I think it's great, and I've done it myself. It's those two colours. I mean...
They do clash a bit. They're a bit... I'm sure my mum would say it's flat green,
and I just...
If it was on interior design, she'd say it's... So, I don't know, it's probably some French word or something that's, you know...
It's very 2025 Instagram.
It would be Oxford or Boston green for me, I think.
It is a bit London.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although you probably can't drive it into London because of you, Les, all that. Actually, 07, it'll be all right.
Yeah.
You can drive it to
you. Yeah, you can take your V10 into London, that's fine. Yeah.
Possibly misinformation, but I'm pretty sure isn't the engine rebuilt as well?
Yeah.
Yes.
So basically, it's a brand new car.
Yeah. So just in time to spend about 50 grand getting it good again, as with all E60.
I think if that was metallic green instead, and it had, the corduroy was a little bit less saturated.
Because it's almost darker, orange.
Yeah, it was darker. Yeah. That could be the guy.
The corduroy, I want to feel it.
So, you know, Ben, I want to sit in it. When we get Chris, you know, on the podcast, we'll let him know that you hate him and all his car
decisions. No, that's not what I said at
Ben
all.
Ben won't be there for that one.
No, he doesn't like it. You know what, actually, Charlie, there's a very big moment, the fact that Ben has decided to stay with the guest. He usually leaves on the day that the guest is in. He hates
that. So this is a sign that you
I like. Don't like this
I feel privileged.
Yeah. I don't like this slander at all.
What else we got?
Now, Ben, some news from you here, which could go downhill for you. You've put in here something about a Mansory 12-cylindry, which I can already tell I don't want to look at.
Absolutely. We'll look at that.
Jesus, horrible.
Holy shit.
12-cylindry, which I already don't really like.
Ben, describe it for the audio listeners.
Okay, imagine the new Ferrari 12-cylindry.
I think that's done
now.
Done well,
ruin it in every way. Make everything bigger.
It's okay. Batman spec.
Now make
that
it
as well.
Purple, wheels black, yellow calipers, big stripe down the middle, and then have the purple fade to black at the rear, and then move to Dubai.
Okay, yeah, you've got it. That rear is tough. And then also, what is it? Forged carbon. I just hate it.
It's glued on with Pritt stick.
Also, the worst thing is the wheels, they just look like standard GT3 991 wheels.
Yeah.
Like, that feels like a downgrade in the wheel department. But I get it. It's A, as a statement, but B, it's to get people talking about it. They build the first one to be mental enough so that everyone goes, whoa, look at this thing, and we talk about it on a podcast.
Also, aren't they silly money? those kits.
Everything is silly money. Yeah. Literally,
but that car built is worth loads of money.
So, oh, yeah.
And there'll be some, listen, I'm not saying my opinion's right here, but if you have less taste, perhaps, than the average person, maybe you like that.
If you have less taste than you have money, perhaps. Mm.
Oh.
But that's like that's literally what it's for. It's, you meet someone and they go, I have a 12-cylindery, and you go, that's cute. I have a Mansory 12-cylindery.
Hey, listen, what colour is our Mansory 12-cylindery?
Is it purple and black and yellow?
No.
Kind of thing that would potentially become cool, again, in like 20, 30 years.
This is...
Because you're looking at, like, you're thinking about Koenig kits.
Or Gembler,
You look at that then.
But then you look at some of the stuff that TechArt did with the Cairn Turbo and stuff like that, and they were horrible back then, and they're still horrible now.
But that's... I wonder that. Do people think that about Koenig stuff, or is... Was it still cool?
But Koenig stuff is I think we've gone backwards. So these days it's more about purist stuff.
Yeah.
So the cars that have them, it's the same with the French hot hatches or the Vauxhall Novas or stuff like that. The problem is you can't find a decent one now because people like me and my friends buried them all 25 years ago. So, you know, finding a decent car now, and it's the same with, you know, with the Testarossa and stuff, like people want, or a 512 TR, people want a completely standard car now.
Yeah.
You know, same with the BMWs, same with all the Fords. You know, try finding a standard SAF.
Yeah.
You know, that hasn't got a massive exhaust, although actually on a SAF, a massive exhaust is kind of like...
Rolled out to absolutely. Yeah.
But, you know, it's things are going... I'm not sure that will... In my mind, bearing in mind I probably have no taste, that will never be cool in my mind.
The other thing I think is that if you look at like an old Koenig or a Gembler or something like that, the modifications are, they're basically a race car wide body without the livery, which is always cool.
Yeah.
Like a dimmer kit is, it's a T16, without a livery. That's cool. Whereas that does not look like a race car. It just looks like a car that you've stuck bits to. I don't think that will ever age well.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah, again, it's stuck on bits. That's,
the exception is people like Brabus.
Yeah, which in some cases look great.
An Alpina and all the tuners from... You know, a Brabus will never not be cool, quite frankly. Even I know some of the stuff they do today is a little bit questionable, but the stuff they did in the 90s with the EV12 and stuff like that, I mean, you know, and the Rocket, they were proper cool cars. You know, we're going to take a Mercedes and we are going to ram the biggest engine we can in there, you know, and I still think they're awesome.
Mm.
But stuff like that, I could take or leave, quite frankly.
Because it's never, as far as I'm aware, they never do anything performance either. Because I always, the Novitec stuff was always a little bit like this, where it was, I never quite liked the kit, but then when you hear the ridiculous exhaust and they do a little bit of engine work or whatever, you're like, okay, all right, I can see why the entire theatre of this thing might appeal to some, but that is truly disgusting. It really is vile.
It's surely coming to the Manchester United car park.
Oh, yeah. That is a footballer's car. Yeah. And then it's going to be sold to a drug dealer. And then, that's...
And then it's going to end up on TDC.
For £8,000.
Yeah. Probably along with the footballer and the drug dealer.
Yeah. Another piece of news from you here, Benjamin. DB12s.
DB12S.
S, sorry.
Not plural.
Yeah, it was a small S.
Well, they have many of them, but this is the new performance one.
Tell us about it, Ben. I've got no idea. Haven't seen this news yet.
That's a tough one.
Oh, pulling out the phone,
this is the
we?
Only thing I put in this week that I haven't researched.
of the two things he's put
also,
in.
Also, that doesn't help your case. That's like pulling up to class and the teacher going, have you got your homework? And you go, no, but this is the only class I didn't do
Let
my homework
Let me pull
for.
Up.
That means 50% of my work I didn't do. This is the 2026 Aston Martin DB12S.
No, I'm doing it. This is the 2026 Aston Martin DB12S.
Just say what Will says after him.
Okay.
Joins the family as the new crown jewel of the DB12 lineup, complete with Ben's idiotic news section.
still
researching. Okay, I'll carry on.
The power output has been stretched from 671 to 690.
Is it still a V12?
Sorry, it has 700 horsepower. Well, we'll see.
These V8?
These are V8.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Mercedes V8.
Yeah.
The four-liter one.
See, I'm still... Because this is now... This is... There's no more DBS Superleggera, right?
Don't think so.
No, because that was built on a DB11.
Is this technically the biggest grand touring Aston you can buy right now?
Well, you've got the Vanquish.
What's that?
What does that look like?
V12, is that a new one? Is there a new Vanquish?
I don't know anything about Aston Martins anymore. You've seen this and you like this.
Yeah. Oh, Vanquish is like a
the last
supercar
one. The last
type thing
they're going to make.
See, now I'm okay with it. Because in my head, I thought that was the... No, not the hypercar looking one.
What do you mean, like a Valhalla? Valhalla Valkyrie.
Oh, yeah. All right. Nordic people talking.
There's people on the podcast going, I actually wanted some news, and they're just tuned out.
So my point was going to be, if the DB12 is the biggest one they have, a V8's not allowed. You must have a minimum of V12.
Oh, yeah.
We must not go below that. If that exists, if the Vanquish exists, I'm fine with the other one being a V8. I do, however, I like that Vanquish.
A hell of a gob on it.
But I keep looking at first-gen Vanquishes. I love them with my heart and soul. Why are you shaking your head, Ben?
Second-gen Vanquish.
What?
The second-gen
Vanquish. No, because the thing...
Second-gen Vanquishes are cheap.
If that was manual,
not
I'd
far
be
off what a,
not buying
a first-gen, really.
You'll get a second-gen for 60, 65 grand, and I've looked at them and gone, I can't afford that. But while I'm sitting there dreaming in my magic fantasy world where I can afford all these nice cars, similar year to maybe a 599 or something, actually, probably an F12, I would think, F12 is about 150 grand, and you can pick it up for 65. And they're good cars.
Yeah.
You know, the first gen, James Bond version, you know, James Bond one. A lot of them are converted to manual now because the automatic was
horrific.
Or the touch of the first. Didn't they not do a second gen automatic?
They didn't. So the S, I think, had some updates to it.
But yeah, but even still, they were converted.
It's the interior on those as well.
Interior really, is tough.
That is what would bug me the most about the Vanquish.
I know there is the is it the Ian Callum one? The Vanquish. But anyway, there is a Resto Mod Vanquish Mark 1. I could leave all of the exterior mods. As if there was just a little bit update to the interior, that is one of my perfect cars. Because that's childhood. My first James Bond was Die Another Day. So for me, that Vanquish is the Aston Martin of all time. DBS.
I'm slightly older. It's got to be the X-Pac Vantage.
That is cool.
From 1988 or 1999 X-Pac Vantage. They are stratospherically pricey now. I think if you were to say have some money, pick any car, I think probably one of those.
It's a skis car.
Yeah.
Yes.
Skis. Yeah. Yeah. Knowing of course it would break because they do. I've got a customer who has one as a daily, and he's dailied it for the city. He bought it new it's an earlier one. It's an early 80s one. He bought it new in the early 80s and it's still his daily.
That's
from
so
200,000 miles. Crazy. He's also got he's got some other very nice cars as well, but he must be in his late 70s, 80s now, still daily.
Tooling around a bit.
I think it's had three restorations at the time. but he said, no, I'm not going to give it up. Why would I? And I love that. I think that's absolutely fair. You know, we live in cars aren't built to last these days.
No.
You know, the stuff from the 80s, it may rust, but the rest of it, you know, it was
good to go.
Apart from Dancius.
Straight out of the factory into the rust repair shop.
My first James Bond was Tomorrow Never Dies. So
what's that? 7 series?
E38.
That explains it.
It created an obsession with the 7 series as a child, which was quite bizarre. it's just not a car you should be. I remember seeing it and finding a 740 on Gran Turismo and going, "They've got that's one of the that's James Bond's car." It wasn't, but it's very similar.
5 year old you was going, "What's interesting is it's a preface, but it has the M parallels."
It was the first time you saw the parallels.
there's a preface lift out. I've come up today in a 750. Yeah. The cars in the film were 740s.
Oh, were they? Okay, yeah.
Yeah, BMW wouldn't give them 750s direct. So the cars are the same. Yeah, but the one I brought today is actually did the same spec as the James Bond. It's a different colour, but it's the same spec as the James Bond ones without the guns and stuff because apparently they're not allowed.
DVLA, please, sir. Accurate representation.
Some of the best gadgets. Control and lock your phone. Really good gadgets. It's just a shame it was... I like a BMW 7 Series. But it's not really a James Bond car.
No.
The BMW badge that comes up with the
yeah. It's not a BMW. There were a couple before, but Octopussy was the first film that I really enjoyed as a James Bond fan. And I always wanted an Alfetta GT6. And about 17 years ago, I took a little trip down to the New Forest where I found a chap who restores them and stuff. And he, in the corner, he had this little Alfetta silver GTV6, which was okay. It drove and everything, £1,500.
Really?
And I bought it naturally because you can't walk away from something like this. And the noise was fantastic. It was it wouldn't start most of the time. and I decided to take it drifting at RAF Odeon with a friend of mine. He was in the RAF and they gave us a bit of corner of RAF on Sunday morning.
And I ripped the shock in it. I snapped the shock in half on the bang. I was driving back up the M3 and it cut out. It was a mighty bang from the back and it cut out. And I was coasted to the edge. Opened the boot. Where's the battery gone? And the battery tray had rusted all the way around. And obviously my drifting, and it had fallen out.
It was Fast and Furious, Danger to Manifold. Yeah. It just popped straight
Luckily,
out.
It wedged itself under the car. It hadn't gone very far and it pulled the leads off. So I sort of jerry-rigged it back together and took it home. And then after that, I decided to go and do a track day in Bedford. It was Evo.
Did you fix anything on it before?
Yes, we changed the shock.
Just work.
And we welded the battery tray back in.
Nice.
And it was an Evo magazine track day at Bedford. Oh, nice. They used to do Evo track days at Bedford. Took it up there, bumbled up here. I arrived and I'm in the Alfetta, lovely car to drive. They're quite tail happy.
Yeah.
And as I arrived in the car park at Bedford Autodrome, the heavens, absolutely catatonic rain everywhere. And I spun and crashed on the sighting lap. because I got to the end of the straight, put my foot on the brake, and it just went like that off the end of the thing. So I thought, well, this is not great. So I sort of drove what was left of my Alfa Romeo back to the pits. Whereupon the fuse box caught fire in the pit. So once we put it out, I did actually get some laps, took it home and deposited it in a barn, and sadly sold it to a very nice Italian who, for 800 quid, when I bought my unit, I had to sell a load of cars 12 years ago. I had a TVR Cerbera that went, the Alfa went, I had a suit, couple of Subarus, everything. Basically, it was one of those, we're buying a unit, everything's getting sold.
Yeah.
And that went, I sold it for 800 quid. And it worked. You know, it wasn't the tidiest car in the world. And it's one of my biggest regrets was selling it, because the noise and to drive was such a nice car. Mm. And you know, it was the same with RX7 FCs as well.
Mm.
Had two of those. I paid £1,000 for one. I was given one for free.
As you do.
And we used to track those, you know, massive flames out the back. Used to put a Pexi Power of C in on them, turn the boost up, and they were so much fun. And then one of them I put a 1JZ in, which just completely wrecked it. And then I sold them for peanuts. And now you try finding an Alfetta or an RX-7 FC for anything less than £10,000.
Yeah.
Or even £20,000. It's hindsight's a wonderful thing.
I've been secretly over the last few weeks, I keep looking at GTV6, even Shells, because I'm Alfa is my blood. That's my dad's. That's my dad's thing. That's what I was raised on. So I have and he's into the older stuff. So when he was trying to get me into the older stuff, I was always looking a little bit newer.
Mm.
And the GTV6 is the thing. It's so cool. You know, I mean, shape.
You can drop you can drop the later 3.2 liters engines in. I mean, like the Alfa 166. Yeah, now that is a car you can still buy fairly cheap.
Mm.
And a manual 166, and I remember when they came out, it wasn't that long ago, was it? Goes back to the how do I find the cars. If I happen to come across a 166 manual 3 litre, were they 3.2s, weren't they?
There is one out. There's one, Chris, our merch guy, he drives one around. That's his thing.
What a lovely car. I'll probably buy it.
166?
166.
What is
it? Yeah, so the 166 one. Is the big one.
166, is that the big 156?
Yeah.
Yeah, well,
that's later than
what Chris has.
This is 164.
Oh, sorry. Please excuse me. Yes, no. 164.
Well, that's just a bit more.
Which is asking for trouble, quite frankly.
Yeah. Sorry. The big 166. Okay.
Yeah, the 166. I'm a bit of a side, but the Alfetta really regret selling that.
Yeah.
There is a company in, I can't remember if it's Italy now. It might be in Italy. They're called OK Tech Alfa Romeo, and they've built a setup for the GTV6.
Oh, yeah.
Look at the fitment on that. If you're audio viewer, just imagine Ultimate Chonk. The other thing they do as well, which I've been, my dad has, that's his kind of halo car that he has, is an Alfa Montreal. And they have a set of wheels. Look at that. That is perfect. That's literally perfection. It's just ultimate meats with a deep dish wheel on an old Alfa. That's, at some point we've been talking about doing Alfas or Italian cars.
That'd be great.
The TDC. A GTV6 would be.
It would be not. It would be two alphas, though. That would be the problem.
Yeah, it would be two alphas. Like, or a delta, in which case I can't afford it.
The problem is finding one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I had a look the other day, actually, at I don't know why, hazes of, you know, we've got loads of money, let's spend it, and then waking up. I was looking at GT56s and FCs, you know, thinking to revisit, and they're just,
that just aren't. I think there's one GT V6 in the UK for sale at the moment,
yeah.
And it's 25,000. It's a lovely car, you know, but you know, 15, 20 years, you couldn't give these things away. You know, I sold my E46 M3. I had done 65,000 miles, and I sold it just at the financial crash, 2008. I sold it for $9,000 to a dealer. That if I'd kept it, it would have been worth more now.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, 20 years later, and you know, that I don't know whether they just people threw stuff away back then, but it was just nowadays. It's everything is still become really pricey.
Yeah, silly money. Are we? I think
that's all she wrote for anecdotes and what such.
That's very nice. Well, Charlie, thank you very much for coming over. I think this will probably be your first appearance on Cream Podcast. I don't think it will be our last. I think we've got more stuff to talk about.
Mm.
But thank you very much for coming on, talking about cars.
Thank you very much for having me and letting me waffle on for ages.
That's part of the reason why you're on here, is because we like listening to you talk about car stuff.
My wife said that.
If you need a ridiculous ECU, check out CyveX. And if you want to see how much power your car is making, and you're kind of down towards the south of England, check out Surrey Rolling Road. Turn up to a Saturday shoot and let Charlie take the piss out of your car, because he will. It doesn't matter what you turn up in, he will. Thank you very much for listening. Cream, get the money.
Dollar bill, y'all.
Dinos.